Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Pam Stack, your host for the day. Welcome. If you're listening to us live and you've got Blog Talk Radio on, would you mind clicking the follow button? If not, I hope you're listening from some wireless device. You can always find us our embedded link or an icon on the Authors on the Air Facebook page or authorsontheair.com on our webpage. Just a reminder that at the beginning of June, we are introducing the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and we'll be inviting 12 more hosts who will be discussing a variety of topics, their own shows, and many of them very, very well-known authors. Interestingly enough, one of those authors is with me today. I'm very happy and getting ready to laugh for most of the hour, I'm sure, with my friend, author, who is a best-selling author, by the way, Elle Loughlin, who's with us now. Elle, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
I'm well, thank you. It's always fun to be here.
Thanks. Yeah, long time no talk. What, an hour ago?
And I don't appreciate your making fun of my texting you to remind you that I sent you an email.
I love that. I thought that was great. This is the only woman I know who texts me to say, I sent you an email, go and read it now, while I'm on Facebook. No? You gotta love a friend like that who's covering all the bases.
Next time I'm going to send you a letter letting you know that I sent you a text message.
There you go. I like receiving that kind of mail. Beats the other stuff. So, Elle, you're hidden away, ensconced somewhere in the mountains, writing on your newest book. I know that. I also know that...
I am in South Park. Yes, indeed, I am in South Park.
In South Park. I love that. So it's so appropriate that you should be visiting them, and they have received you.
They have received me. But I should point out, to be fair, that South Park is not a city. It's an area, of like a valley basin that's like 1,000 square miles. So good luck trying to find me.
Well, there you go. And that was really the whole idea for you getting away, so you could clear your head and write without interruption, except for me, of course.
Correct.
So I'm glad you took the time out to talk to us. Let's start off with, in case I can't imagine that someone doesn't know this, but you know, you got to tell us about your existing books, because there's way so much more happening in your life than those books, but it's a critical jump-off point for our discussion today. So, first published book in the growing list was?
The first published book was The Frog Prince back in July of 2010, and I had the great good fortune and dumb luck of having my first book become a bestseller. It was self-published. Took about 3 or 4 months, and then it became a bestseller. And The Frog Prince is, well, do you want me to say what, you know, sort of give a elevator pitch for each?
Absolutely, yeah. We've got plenty of time. This is by far my favorite book so far. But, you know, all that can change within a moment's notice. I have read all of Elle's books, and right now this stays at
the top.
You're
not alone. The Frog Prince continues to be the most popular book I've written. And, I want to go so far as to say beloved. I mean, it is truly beloved by lots and lots of people.
You have kind of a community of frog lovers, don't you? You were kind of telling me a little bit about the name. Yeah.
That's my Frog Prince army. These are people who are very proprietary about the Frog Prince, and they feel very possessive of it. And most of the time they're awesome because they're on Facebook and we're interacting, and sometimes, like, if someone posts a negative review on a blog, you know, like a blogger reviews the Frog Prince and they didn't like it, they, you know, I don't know how a word gets out, but they'll go to the review and they'll leave comments like, you just didn't understand this book, like it's some, you know, fantastic literary classic, like War and Peace, you know. It's just this fluffy romantic comedy.
That's better.
So, yeah,
it's better than War and Peace.
Can be
Let's
dangerous.
Be serious. It's better than War and Peace. Who the hell wants to read War and Peace anyway? I'm sorry. Let some learned scholar do that. We want to have fun with our books, and that The Frog Prince is definitely one. If you don't
yeah,
have
it's an
your
escape.
Story,
I mean, it's purely a Cinderella story. It's about a Denver sex researcher who meets the man who would have been the king of Austria if the monarchy there hadn't been abolished in 1918. So it's very much a loose riff on the Grimm's fairy tale, The Frog Prince. Yes. And I was astounded when it became so popular and continued to be popular for, you know, well, I mean, it still is one of my most popular novels. But, you know, the thing of it is that people ask me, often ask, you know, will you write a sequel? And I'm not opposed to a sequel per se. It's just, out of all the email requests I get, that's the most common one. Will you write a sequel to The Frog Prince?
Right.
People don't want to let the fairy tale end. And I get that, but there's just, there's not a lot of ways to go on with the story.
Right,
without,
where do you go?
You know, like I said, like without jumping the shark and making it really contrived and stupid. I mean, it's already on the border of, you know, implausible. So I don't know if we need to take it another step. But I do want to say that I did get an email, or maybe it was a comment on one of my posts about The Frog Prince. And a reader said, you know, she says, my sister has this really great idea that instead of writing a sequel to The Frog Prince, you could do like Stephanie Meyer did with Twilight and write and rewrite Twilight from, you know, Twilight was rewritten from Edward's point of view, and it's called Midnight Sun. And it was never, I mean, she put it online because it got leaked and all that. But honestly, I read Midnight Sun and I enjoyed it far more than I did Twilight. Learning about the man's motivations, you know, in courting the woman was much more interesting to me. And so she said, yeah, you could try doing something like that. You could write it from Roman's point of view. Now, that's something that I would be interested in doing. I think that would be a fun, if nothing else, an interesting writing exercise, similar to writing the alternate ending to Sleeping Beauty. That intrigued me, and I'm definitely putting that in the hopper to think about seriously in a way that I've not thought about any sequel or, you know, jump off of Frog Prince in any way before, because I just think that it's better to just have one book than a bad sequel, in my opinion.
I agree with you on that. But having said that now, the next book was
Sleeping
Beauty.
The next book is Sleeping Beauty. Sleeping Beauty was published in August of 2011, and it is about a young woman, Claire, who suffers from a disease called Sleeping Beauty Syndrome, which is actually a real medical condition that causes you to sleep or black out for long periods of time. And when you come out of this episode that you're in, you don't have any recollection of what's transpired during that period of time. And so Claire comes out.
It's kind of like being out on Friday night with your friends and drinking too much, except it lasts a little longer.
Yeah, except for it's like 6 weeks. So she wakes up from a six-week episode to find that she is apparently involved in this whirlwind romance with this guy that she doesn't like. Before she fell asleep,
that's definitely a bad weekend of drinking, Al.
Yeah, well, it's even worse than that because he has the key to her house and he just shows up at her apartment and he's like, hey, baby, how was your day? And she's like, what? Who the hell are you and why are you in my apartment? And so it's that's the premise of that book. And, you know, I guess eventually we'll end up talking a little bit about the newest project involved with Sleeping Beauty, but
absolutely.
I'll scratch ahead. Sleeping Beauty Wakes Up is about, it's the same exact book as Sleeping Beauty, only what happened was I kept getting emails from people who were dissatisfied with the ending of Sleeping Beauty. It's a love triangle, so there's Claire and her best friend, Davin, and then this doctor, Brendan Charmont, and, you know, it's a love triangle, so she has to end up with one of the guys, and in the original Sleeping Beauty, she ends up with the doctor. And I kept seeing reviews where people were like, yeah, I like the book. I don't like the guy she ended up with. I think she should have ended up with Davin Wibbins, who is her best friend. And so in March of 2012, I wrote an alternate ending. The books are exactly the same up through chapter 11. And then from chapter 11, I just make one small change that causes the plot to kind of veer off in a different direction. And it just sort of naturally cascades to a different believable conclusion. It's not the same book, you know, all the way through. There's about, you know, probably 30 or 40% new content. You have to, you know, change the motivations of the characters, otherwise the book doesn't work out. And so a lot of people enjoy that. Some people read both. If people ever ask me which one they should read, I usually tell them to read Sleeping Beauty Wakes Up because, you know, the readers were right. It was the book I should have written the first time.
You wrote alternative endings because, I mean, you see that sometimes in movies, and fans actually get to vote on this stuff. You often see it in television shows where there are alternate endings and all. I think it's a great idea. I love it. And because you write in the genre for these books in romantic comedy, or romance. I think it's really nice that you allow your readers to choose one or the other or both. So it's great.
Yeah, I mean,
and I read both,
by
the way.
There was a little bit of backlash, you know, on some of the blogs from authors and readers. I tend to do things that piss everybody off. I can't seem to do one controversial thing that just pisses off one group. So, you know, a lot of authors were like, you know, your book is the Ten Commandments. Moses came down from the mountain. It's carved in stone. I mean, I don't believe that. I mean, if people are welcome to think that about their own books, but that's not the way I feel about mine. These are two standalone novels, and it's, to me, the way I feel about them as a
sure.
as a creative person is that they are parallel universes. Both of these things happened.
Right.
So it's not like I replaced
right.
one with the other because I didn't like the first one. I still love the first version. And
right.
these people, and like I said, this is sort of like that movie Sliding Doors where, you know, Gwyneth
yes.
Paltrow misses the train and doesn't miss the train, and then the movie sort of veers off into two parallel stories of what happened
parallel
because
stories,
of that one
exactly.
incident.
Yes.
So,
yeah,
yeah, it was
that's
a little
that's
bit
a
of
great
a
analogy.
Controversy, but, yeah. So then there was Alice in Wonderland, which I wrote in 37 Days of Hell, while trapped in a hurricane, I might add. It came out in November of 2012. And it is about a female professional poker player, which there aren't very many of, who is has made it to the final table in Surfers Paradise, Australia. And, you know, the world of professional poker is pretty cutthroat. And she ends up, well, in the first chapter, she ends up getting bit by a shark. And then she meets a shark, a card shark named Rabbit Montgomery, who promises to help her win the tournament. But whether or not he really plans to do that remains to be seen. It has a very, you know, as the name of the book might actually hint at, it is sort of a whirlwind of confusion. I get that a lot in the reviews. People are like, I had no idea what the hell was going on in this book. It was very confusing. But Alice in Wonderland is confusing. I try to take the feel, you know, for the Frog Prince, it was rather whimsical. For Sleeping Beauty, Beauty, the original Grimm's stories and the oral traditions that Sleeping Beauty, the Grimm's brothers drew from, Sleeping Beauty was a very erotic, sensual story that had to do with, you know, quite frankly, having sex with someone while they were sleeping. And some people even suggest it's having sex with someone while you know, when they've died. So it's got this really sensual, erotic kind of undertone to the book that I think I pulled into the novel. And then with Alice in Wonderland, I tried to make it fantastical. And so, yes,
right.
it is. Like when you read Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, it is very confusing because Alice doesn't know what's going
yeah.
on because it is fantastical. And likewise, Alice Bedall in Alice
right.
in Wonderland is also confused and doesn't understand what's going on. She's been thrown into this world that she's only been a part of for like 4 months. So it's not like she's been in it for years and years and understands the culture and the motivations of all the players
right.
involved and that type of thing. So that's Alice in Wonderland. And I have a thriller, Alice,
wow.
as well. But I usually, you know, I don't usually talk that much about it.
Well, talk
not
about
because
the thriller.
It's not a good
why
book.
Not?
Well, it's just because I always get scared that it's going to confuse my fan base and there's going to be some kindly little grandmother who just read The Frog Prince and she was like, what's this virgin story? And then there's like a rape of the Virgin Mary in the first chapter and then she's going to have a heart attack and die.
I want to go back to your first books because I always refer to them as your fractured fairy tales. Simply because I know of no other way to describe them. There used to be a little thing on TV where there was a fractured fairy tale. I don't know if it was on Saturday mornings or something, cartoons. And it was kind of a riff on the fairy tales, on the Grimm brothers' stories. And each of your stories, to me, are so unique, and they're obviously contemporary stories. So, I find them delightful. I love the whimsy. Of course, my favorite, again, I'll tell you, is The Frog Prince because I love the whimsical part of it, but the dialogue is so snapped. It's right there. It's funny.
Well, The Frog Prince is an unusual case, and I'll explain to you why it's the most popular book. It's not a mystery. It's just that it can't easily be recreated, the success of that in another novel. The reason The Frog Prince works and the reason why people love it so much is because of the main character. The main character, Lee Fromm, she's this very, very beautiful woman, but she's sort of trapped in this body of a social misfit. I like to think of her as being like on the autism spectrum, you know. So she has like zero social skills, but you know she gets a lot of attention from men and people in general because she's very striking looking and she doesn't always know how to react appropriately to that. It unnerves
her. Not at
her.
All. She can't carry on a conversation. She actually loses her whole sense of self as someone talks to her.
Right, and
but
so the book is written
witty
all
when
my books
she talks
are written
to her
in,
friends.
Right. I mean, her friends, you know, and all the books that I write for the fairy tale riffs are first person present tense. So with Leafrom, you're in her head for the entire story, and more so than any of the other books I've written, she is so. She's such a spaz that she overthinks everything.
She really is.
And
I didn't want to say that she is.
Yeah, she's a total spaz, and she overthinks everything. And it's her overthinking. I mean, she thinks for an entire paragraph about what she should do when a guy pulls a chair out for her because she's never had anyone pull a chair out for her, and she literally doesn't know what to do. And so she's like, am I supposed
to
just cover my ass over the chair and let him, like, scoop me up like a, you know, like a front loader? Or what the hell's supposed to happen here? Do I sit down and let him shove me in? I mean, like,
she overthinks it. Yeah, she knows she overthinks it. That's the funny thing. That makes it even funnier. Yeah, she's really a very funny character.
If you have a character who's, you know, not that confident about their social abilities and has to overthink, I myself am, you know, on the autism spectrum. I have Asperger's. You know, I didn't realize it until I was an adult, and I had a son who's has Asperger's. So, but as an adult, I realized that's where all my social problems came from, and it took like 35 years of study to realize that you can run social scripts and you can study the way successful, you know, people who are successful in conversations, how do they talk to people, and you can just basically recreate that. So the social abilities I have now are still very rote. I mean, I'll say, as someone's talking to me, I'll think, okay, well, next I can ask this, or then I can see, you know, do you have any children? Where did you go to college? You know, I mean, so it's very scripted even still for me. It's a lot more natural feeling, but I'm never going to be a natural conversationalist who's very, very comfortable in that,
You know something that I find exceptionally interesting about you, and I did not know that you yourself had Asperger's. I knew about your son, of course, but you are a speaker over and over again. I mean, you are a teacher. You talk about your work. You instruct others. You give advice. You're not afraid of just being right out there and putting yourself out. And you seem to do it so effortlessly.
No.
It's really a credit to how much self-control you have.
Definitely not true. I wish that were true. It's not effortless, but it is meant to look that way. I will concede.
Well,
but, you know, it's like dancing. The more effortless it looks, the harder it actually is for the dancer. No, it is not effortless. But, you know, being on the autism spectrum, like I said, I didn't know this until my son was diagnosed, and then they sort of handed me this sheet of, like, here's what you can look for when your son's an adult. And I'm reading this sheet, and I'm going, did he say my son or me? Like, did he just give me a sheet saying, we've noticed that you need help. Like, here's all your, you know, personality quirks and all this weird stuff that you do. So part of Asperger's is not being aware enough of having difficulty with, not empathy for people who are in need or trouble, but empathy for how people are going to react to something that you do, which is why people with Asperger's often say or do controversial things. They don't mean to because they just don't realize that people are going to be angry or upset. For instance, when I published that blog about responding to reader reviews, it never in a million years occurred to me that people would be upset by such a benign and, quite frankly, boring blog post about, you know, the business of publishing and customer service.
We're going to talk about that too. Yeah, you didn't expect.
You know, I never expect a backlash, but Asperger's also comes with another, like, delightful little, and this is actually a helpful thing, because you don't really understand why people are upset. You tend to not care as long. It just becomes too bewildering to try to sort out and figure out, so you don't really dwell on it for a long period of time because it's just a waste of energy, and in the end, there's really nothing you can do about it. As long as I feel like whatever I have done that is perceived to be controversial, that I've done with conviction and with integrity, then I won't back down. So it doesn't really matter what anyone has to say about it.
Right. No, and you know, your tenacity is very, very appealing. It makes you a very interesting person. And again, that part that says, well, I don't really care, you know, that I think that's a good thing. That's almost a protective mechanism that writers probably need to have. You know, authors need to have a little bit of that, you know, I'm doing what I want to do. I'm doing it the best way I can. And you may not like my style, but I don't really care if you do or not. You know, I mean, obviously,
yeah. And the other thing
is
that, you know, I don't know if it's so much I don't really care what people think. It's just that when you're on the spectrum, you have an ability to compartmentalize to the extreme. And so for me, that's why I can respond to negative reader reviews that are blistering, where people call me names and a fraud and say the book was sucked and it's terrible and it should be, you know, burned or blown up or whatever. I just, right. That doesn't affect me as a creative person, because when I respond to those reviews, I'm acting as a business person, and the only thing I'm concerned about is customer service. It's very difficult to explain, but I'm certain that is also probably one of the characteristics of just, you know,
well,
being on the spectrum.
I want to, since we're talking about this right now, and it has really was not my intention of doing it in this order, because I really want to talk more about your books and an enhanced ebook and so on, but we'll go back to that, because the first thing that happened when you and I first started talking way back, is we were talking about this notion of bad reviews and, you know, author response to it. As you know, in all my shows, I ask authors, you know, how do you feel about reviews? Do you read them? You know, how do they affect you? What do you do when you get a bad review and all? And some people are just very pragmatic about the whole thing. You know, oh, it's subjective and there's not really anything I can do. I read it if it makes sense to me and I really see a pattern there, okay. But, you know, maybe it's just not the reader's cup of tea. It's not the genre they like. They didn't like my style, whatever it is. And I also go further than that and say, well, do you want to do a thumbs up or a thumbs down system, or would you prefer to have the star rating system, the 0 to 5 stars? Most people say they want the star system. There are others who say I'd rather have thumbs up, thumbs down. So here we are. You have figured out how to do all these things on your own, as many self-published authors have had to learn. Some learn lessons better than the other, like you, for instance. You've learned your lessons well, but then again, I know that you're anally research-oriented and you check every detail, which is a good thing
true.
For you. You know, I mean, that's a good thing. So how did it come up that someone said to you, how do you deal with a bad review? And you had an off-the-chart answer that nobody else has been willing to say.
So the reason I respond to negative reviews is because it's a purely customer service strategy, and it's the same reason that when you go to a restaurant and you have a meal that you didn't like and you complain to the manager, it's the same reason why they provide good customer service to you. It's not because they want you to, if you ordered a steak and it was, you know, not cooked properly or whatever, it's not that they're comping your meal because they want you to like the steak better. You already ate the steak and it was gross.
Right.
And so your opinion about the steak has not changed. So if you were to go on Yelp and give stars right at that moment for that steak, it'd probably be like a 1-star review. But the manager, you know, interceding and saying, here, I want to comp your meal, and here's a free voucher to come back again for free. Again, there's nothing he can do about the steak. That ship has sailed. But you are very likely to come back. And not only that, but your experience, even the experience right there in the restaurant when you had the bad steak, has changed for the better. And how do you know that? Because you go back. I mean, if comping the meal and giving you that voucher, I mean, you don't go back to the place because, you know, you're hoping to get another crappy steak. I mean, you go back because the person took care of you as a customer, that you didn't like the product. They took care of it, and so you go back. So the bottom line business reason for taking care of reader customers and simply offering them a refund if they haven't already gotten one from Amazon, because sometimes they've waited too long to read the book, is to simply make it right so that the bad taste of the steak is washed away, at least it's somewhat diminished. But more importantly, I mean, that's not nearly as important as creating a repeat customer. Every reader that I've interacted with.
You don't want to lose your reader. Sure.
You don't want to lose your reader. Every reader I've interacted with on Amazon or who's emailed me to complain about a book, I've offered them a refund. Most of them never follow, you know, they don't ever take you up on it because they're so astounded you're offering one in the first place. But, you know, the bottom line is I don't want your money if you didn't like the steak. So I'm not worried about giving the money back, and that's fine. But what ended up happening, which I found rather interesting, over the course of, you know, I've done this since 2010, so I've got several years of kind of like data under my belt now. Every reader that I've interacted with in that fashion has gone on to read another of my books.
Another book.
And how do I know this? Well, they don't always tell me. They don't always email me and say, hey, remember I blasted you and gave you that crappy one-star review for Frog Prince, but I read Sleeping Beauty. I really liked it. Sometimes they email me and tell me that, but most often I run across their names in the review. So, like, they'll give Alice in Wonderland a five-star review. And you remember these people because you don't really get that many negative reviews. Well, I don't. You know, I'm fortunate. I don't get a whole lot overall. So I remember the names of the people.
Someone's getting negative reviews all the time. They've got a
big problem that they need to take care of. They should be reading
the
reviews.
Right, nothing to do with the reader.
Right. So, you know, so I remember their names and their handles or whatever, their pseudonyms they use on Amazon. And that's how I know, because they come back and they read another of the books, and they'll even say in the review, I read such and such, I didn't enjoy it, this was a great book, and I'm going to go on to read her other books. And that's why you do it. Now, this is not for everyone.
Let me back up a second. Hold on one second, because my question to you is, how did this come to you? How did you know this was the thing for you to do? How did you know? Yeah, how did you know? Was it just logic? You're applying the steak analogy and saying, well, someone doesn't like this book. I'm really stunned. I'm really hurt. Or, wait a minute, let me find out why. Or, I don't really care why they didn't like it. I want to make it right.
Where did you
acquire this?
Okay, well, I've been in customer service my whole life. I mean, I was in the fire department for 6 years. I was a movie theater manager for 6 years. I managed clinical research studies at the University of Colorado. So, and I believe in customer service, you know, and I know how to do it well. And it's not hard. You just can't take anything personally and just listen to the person and only respond to whatever it is that they're trying to tell you. Most people just want to be listened to. I mean, once you listen to them, they even calm down and they become very, very friendly most of the time. So, but the reason I did it to begin with is because, and this is honest God's truth, I got my first negative review and it occurred to me for the first time, and I don't know why it had never occurred to me before, it occurred to me that this person did not like my book. They hated it. They gave it a one-star review. And for some reason, unlike any other product you could, you know, you can buy out there in the world, I was going to get to keep the money. Like, that didn't make any sense to me. If I don't like a product, I return it and I get my money back. And I thought, oh, my God, this is horrible. No wonder why they're pissed. I'd be pissed, too. I've read books before that I didn't like. I've actually taken them back to bookstores before. You know, I get like three chapters in, I'm like, no, this is not for me. You know, I blew $20 on it. You bet your ass I'm taking it back to the bookstore.
Sure.
So that was the bottom line, is that I was absolutely appalled that I was going to keep this person's money, and they felt so negative about the product that they'd purchased. That's how it came about. And I wasn't offended by their opinion. Because you can't reach every reader. There's just no way possible to do it. But that was when it hit me that I was going to keep this person's money, and I could even laugh about it if I wanted to. I could be like, ha, 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 you didn't like my book. You know, go suck it. I'm going to keep the $5. That just felt a little unsavory and unethical to me. And, you know, for other people who don't...
Hello? Okay, Elle has dropped from the air. She's going to call back in. We are experiencing all kinds of bad weather here in South Beach, and I'm really sorry where the studio is. Okay, so she'll call back in just a few seconds. In the meantime, we are talking with Elle LaFlorian. If you have not read any of her books, please go to her Facebook page, Elle LaFlorian Author, and check her out. Also, you can check her out on the web at ellaflorian.com. We are talking about how readers authors respond to negative reviews, and most authors that we've found really try to be introspective about it, but don't contact their customers. So that's a problem in Elle's opinion, and she has chosen to deal with it in a very unique way. She's decided to go ahead and talk to the people that have written the bad reviews, listen to what they had to say, and figure it out, which is great. And I understand where she's coming from. It's a difficult thing to do. You may have your feelings hurt. You know, you put a lot of work into your book, and you want to make sure that it's well liked and well received. So it's a problem. I'm sorry that we've not got Elle back on the line. I'm going to wait a few more minutes, and if we have to reschedule this, we will. Let's see if she comes back on. Okay, hold on. Okay, she's still not back with us. I'm going to give her a few more minutes. In the meantime, Elle has this is a very controversial subject for many authors. They are not thrilled that Elle has made a decision to talk to her bad reviewers. It only makes sense to me. I think it's a great idea, but that's me. I'm not a writer. I just talk on the radio to writers. And I wish that all authors would think about this. Okay, we are now 2 minutes past the time that Elle was dropped from the show. I'm thinking that perhaps she cannot call back in. If that is the case, I'm going to try one time to give her a call in and see if she can get back on. Otherwise, we're going to have to reschedule our time with her, which is a shame because she's such an interesting author. In the meanwhile, Elle's books are The Frog Prince, Sleeping Beauty, and Alice in Wonderland. She's written also a Rapunzel that she's working on, and that's a really good one for you to read as well. We did not get a chance to talk to her about her thriller that she's written. In the meantime, if I reach her, we're going to come right back on the air. I'm going to give her a few more minutes to see if she can get in. Otherwise, we're going to call it. Okay. Elle's obviously having time getting back into the studio. I'm so sorry, friends. This interview will be rescheduled, and we will come back to you with Elle LaFlorian. Tomorrow, we're talking to Chris Twala. She's not been on the show before. She is another interesting lady who has her own POV. Please stay tuned to the Facebook Authors on the Air page so that you can read when she is going to be on the show. And then on Wednesday, one of our authors is going to interview me. I don't know how that's going to turn out, but it should be interesting. We're also going to talk to Deborah Koontz, who writes the Lucky series based in Las Vegas. She's on book tour, and she'll be calling in, telling us about her book tour, which should be interesting too. In the meanwhile, thank you so much for being with us today. I'm sorry for the difficulties we've had being with my friend Elle LaFlorian. She's fabulous. We will get her back on the air with you again. In the meanwhile, have a great day. Thanks so much. Thank you, Mom and Dad.